everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Art of Space Engineering, the podcast which explores the details behind how space systems come together and what lessons are learned along the way. I'm your host, Sarah Rogers, and today's episode explores the data processing side of space missions. Data processing is often broken up into space and ground-based tasks to make the most efficient use of resources. And this has been evolving much more as algorithms and hardware have improved, but traditionally only a moderate amount of data processing was done on board the spacecraft, while more complex processes were done on the ground, where computing resources are much greater and you're not limited by power budget. While the end-to-end data processing chain is an important part of space missions, it can still be very time-intensive and costly for the end user to gather and manipulate that data. The cost of inefficient data processing can have significant impacts on how quickly companies can deliver operational data products to it. And as we look to collect and combine more data from space systems, it's important to look for ways that we can make this more efficient. Now, to explore this topic, I had the pleasure of hosting two guests today, Laura Costa Ortega and Laura Todd. Laura Costa Ortega is the co-founder of Tilebox, a company which specializes in building an orchestration layer for space data pipeline management for use on the ground and in space. Now, essentially, this manages where processes run to improve the overall computing efficiency and optimizes elements such as parallel processing, batch computing, and data rollouts. But Tilebox does this using an abstract and flexible architecture which allows engineers to adapt the data processing pipeline for new missions, hardware, and data formats. More recently, Tilebox partnered with Colossus to develop a hardware-software platform that can provide on-orbit data processing. And this is the type of capability that can help quickly identify the parts of data that a user would need and ultimately reduce the data volume that the spacecraft would need to downlink. We explore the on-orbit computing side in this episode a bit and some of the unique challenges that come with it. There's a lot more to it than just managing computing resources, and I really enjoyed learning more about that from Laura. And my second guest was another Laura, Laura Todd. Laura is the Vice President of Space Exploration Future Programs at Airbus Defence and Space, which is based in Toulouse, France. There, she manages new programs and shapes the strategy of what is next in space for human and robotic exploration. She's also a mentor at the Creative Destruction Lab, or CDL as you'll hear it abbreviated, which is, like, just the coolest name ever. CDL is a nonprofit organization that provides an objective space program for massively scalable seed stage science and technology based companies. Now, as a mentor, Laura helps companies craft their strategy and narrative and ultimately connect with their customers. So Tilebox was a graduate of the CDL program, which is how these two became connected. Now, this made for a very fun and unique conversation as these different backgrounds were allowed to really play off of each other in this discussion. So not only do we explore the engineering challenges that come with data processing, but this provided a lot of insight for me into the startup development, the mentality behind that, and the decision making that goes into developing a product that people that can use. Especially in terms of how people are trying to develop space systems or elements of space systems differently and in a more agile way. So this episode is both technical and thought-provoking, and overall was just super fun to record. So I really hope you enjoy listening to these different perspectives and take something new away from this conversation. And with that said, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Laura Costa Ortega and Laura Todd. Welcome, you guys, to the Art of Space Engineering. I'm so excited to have you guys on this episode. So, you know, I'm a space systems engineer, so I work more on, like, the actual payload side and or the spacecraft side. And, like, the data processing is always something that is, it's thought of, but we can never get to a part where we can optimize it with a mission. So I think what you guys are doing is really cool, and I'm just super excited to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us today, both Laura's. I hope it's not confusing when you talk to one or the other, but really, really happy to be here today.
Just a second. I'm very happy to be on your podcast, and I'm very much looking forward to a nice open discussion, especially as you've got such a good background in system engineering, and I'm sure you've seen a lot, Sarah. So thank you for inviting us.
Awesome. Yeah, with that, I thought we could start off with just a brief background on both of you guys to get to know you, and then go off on a bunch of tangents from there. So Laura Costa, can we start with you? What is your background and what inspired you to start Tilebox?
So I'm co-founder, I'm Laura Costa, co-founder of Tilebox, and my background actually is in remote sensing engineering. So I'm not a systems engineer, I'm not a hardware engineer, I come from the data analytics part. And I really saw from very, very early on, firsthand, that how much potential space data holds, right? That there is so much data and you can do so much with it. But then I also saw how much of a pain accessing all that data and processing was. So it was like, there was a lot of excitement towards the data, but then once you start diving into it, it was very, very, very costly in terms of people, time, cloud resources, processing, everything took forever. So then I started working for software companies and I started seeing this from the other side, from the side of being a Taylor software development company and trying to build these kind of things for others. And then I had the possibility to build systems, right? To build systems that help companies to process this data. But there was always like some sort of constraint around it. It was always very bespoke, right? For a specific use case, a specific data type, a specific project. So you could never really approach it from a full abstract point of view. And that's what kind of triggered the creation of Tilebox. We wanted to have a tool that is the one we would have liked to have back then. So that's why we developed this tool. And it started growing with time, with more capabilities, more integrations, more forward thinking with the onboard computing integration we've done with Colossus as well. So yeah, that's basically a bit my background.
I guess with more of making a sort of an abstract system, were you sort of imagining something that could be, you know, reduce the amount of time for development and be plugged into anything to just help, you know, collect data and do whatever the user needed?
Yeah, that was basically the idea. And to, from my point of view and side as a data analyst, right? It was like, I want to iterate fast. I want to be able to develop an algorithm and then be able to iterate over that one algorithm fast enough. I don't want to, you know, run it for a week, then something breaks, the whole thing falls down, and I have to start from, like, you know, this is very costly, and this really holds people back to bring new things on the table. So I really saw that on the morale of the team also. It affects long time the morale of the people that are building really cool products.
One of my best friends is a planetary scientist, and I think the only real like data processing that I've seen has been watching him, you know, work on like his PhD thesis and processing all sorts of LiDAR data and images, and it is costly. Like, you know, you're even just like the computing resources that he was using to do all of the stuff efficiently. And trying to extract like specific information, like it can be very manual.
Yeah, I think also that the data has been evolving, right? And hardware has been evolving, sensors have been evolving. Now you have super high resolution data, hyperspectral sensors that capture hundreds of bands, right? This has been evolving, but the tools to actually interact with it have not. And everything, the whole ecosystem is super fragmented, right? So there is no like one standard to in a very optimal way, access, process, deploy, deliver data to customers. Everyone kind of does their own. And solutions that they were implemented like 10 years ago, right now, they're struggling to cope with new data systems and new data delivery formats. And I really think that there is the need of on one side having flexible systems that can plug together, and then you can have a solution. People don't want problems, they want solutions. And on the other hand, it's really an opportunity for collaboration in the space industry, instead of everyone rebuilding the wheel and trying to do things again and again, but try to use systems that are out there and work and put them together.
Yeah. No, and I think too, I feel like the industry is moving more towards trying to combine data sources. Like I think a lot of the, at least the scientific remote sensing gaps are related to, you know, we'd love to have multiple instruments or, you know, combining data sets and processing those to achieve like faster and more integrated like analysis of what's going on, whether that's on orbit or just plugging in data from, you know, that other spacecraft have collected and putting it together. So Yeah, I think I totally agree. I think finding ways to do that efficiently is going to be really useful.
Okay, so quick aside, before we moved on, I wanted to expand a little bit on Laura's statement that companies are struggling to cope with these new data types and formats, because I feel that it really emphasizes why they saw the basis behind Tilebooks as being a critical need for the space industry. So in following up on this with Laura via email, this is what she mentioned to me. So today, satellites generate about 10 times more data than just 5 years ago. So historical systems were designed for a very small fraction of that volume and much simpler use cases in terms of processing. So they struggle to apply existing algorithms at scale and adopt AI, laser communication, and edge processing, and lack a lot of flexibility from these new types of systems. A good example could be data fusion, where it's often assumed that all the data is in one place. But what if you need to combine satellite imagery that is stored distributedly or with on-the-ground sensor data? So Tilebox has seen architectures struggle to handle data that's not co-located, and this leads to significantly increased costs when you have to move data around. Many companies have spent millions and taken a very long time, like several years, building their own mainstream software because an integrated solution simply didn't exist. In many cases, these systems are now bottlenecks. So for instance, adding a new machine learning model or an algorithm can require extensive rewrites, which slows down data scientists and prevents them from iterating new algorithms fast enough. These architectures also often lead to increased cloud costs as more compute power is needed. And she mentions that she fears at some point the cost of creating data products might actually exceed the price that these companies can offer. So on top of that, maintaining but also evolving these systems requires very specialized teams skilled in satellite data, space software, and cloud infrastructure. This talent is quite scarce, and scaling up operations makes it even harder to compete on accuracy, price, and latency when more agile solutions will enter the market. End quote. So I really appreciated this insight, especially as a hardware developer who doesn't really get to see a lot of the end user data processing. And I also really appreciated the insight into the job market, especially, and just how, you know, incredibly scarce and specialized a lot of this talent is, and how critical it is for people being able to do the kind of processing that they need in order to benefit analyses, derive conclusions, and generate ways that the scientific data can actually move things forward. So I really appreciated Laura taking the time to sort of really dive into that over email so I could expand on that a little bit here. Okay, and with that said, we'll now go back to the interview.
Laura Todd, I know you come from a very different background. You've seen a lot of like the new space, but also sort of traditional space. So can you talk a little bit about how you guys got introduced and how you started mentoring Tilebox?
Well, thank you for saying traditional space, because I'm not really a fan of the new space, old space, and all the other descriptions of space. Right. So, I mean, I've been very privileged and lucky in that I spent 20 years with Airbus, and not just Airbus Defence and Space, but a lot of the time in Airbus Commercial. So where, you know, basically it's most famous for building those aircraft that take people on holiday or to go home to see their family for the holiday period, for example, which is what's coming up soon. And what I see is that if you have everyone trying to do the same topic over and over again, or reinventing the wheel, as Laura just said, you've got a lot of waste and inefficiency in your system. So I had the privilege of being able to see different talented people across different cultures, different spectrums, who were able to come together to produce a final whole that was for a purpose, not just for the sake of doing a big technical project, but for a purpose. I've always been, though, let's be clear, a space enthusiast. So although I did aerospace engineering and I had the best time in Airbus Commercial, I got to transfer over to the area of defense and space and really look at what's the future of space exploration. I'm also a problem solver. I like to look at the big picture. And so I wouldn't call it traditional space, but when I look at how space is applied today, it's very much of we do a project, we do a mission. And my question is always, why? Why are you doing it in this way? What is the end objective? What is the user experience? Who is the operator? Who is the end user that needs to do something with this? And how are you doing it in an iterative way? And we come back to reinventing the wheel, which it's like if you, and I'm a Star Wars fan, so I'm going to reference on Star Wars, but when you get a Lego model for the Millennium Falcon, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a little bit more than the engine and the cockpit. There is the chess table, the holo chess table. There's the medical bay. There's the sleeping compartment. There's whatever, all the different areas of space. There's the storage compartment to smuggle. But without all of that, you don't have the Millennium Falcon. And yet we seem to focus on the big sexy parts, such as the engine and the cockpit, and not all the different Lego bricks that are needed. So we need to have those capabilities, those features, those technologies for it all to come together. But more interestingly, we need to have it against a common architecture so that it fits together. Not let's, again, can you imagine if Lego were to say, I'm going to do a new model of an X-Wing. I'm not going to use the same bricks. I'm going to design all new bricks. So why are you designing all new bricks? Why would you do that? And so this is also something that needs to be addressed in terms of space. But because there's this mentality of a mission, of a project mentality, and not what's my end user scenario, what's my end vision, what are the elements that are needed, how do I iterate on that, and how do I improve on it to get there, but in a modular, scalable way, not let's get it right first time and do a huge project and program that lasts forever, and I'm not trying testing. I don't like to use the word fail. Learning from that, iterating, feeding it back in, and doing the next step in a more rapid fashion, which is also consequently why we've seen a lot of projects or programs that have taken years, if not decades, for launch. And then we're not introducing the new technology, such as ventures and startups like Tilebox are doing. So even though I've, like, you know, it really is a privilege to work for the bigger organizations, what I like to do is work with these smaller companies who have said, you know what, we're going to do this specific Lego brick because we see there's a need for it. And we're going to work together with other people against that architecture and framework to make it as simple as possible. So it's plug and play, it's iterative, and that we can constantly evolve and learn from it. And so what I tend to like to do is help them shape that message to talk to normal people, because unfortunately, not everyone's a space enthusiast like we are, and they often ask the question, why are we even bothering? So that's something that I work on as well, with the strategy, the narrative, and the storytelling.
No, I love that. That's such an important, and I feel like almost understated part when you first get into the industry, because, like, I mean, you know, coming into the industry from college, they teach you nothing about storytelling and the importance of really, I think, developing a vision for what you want and finding a way to communicate it and make it useful. And it's such an important skill. And that actually kind of leads into one of the questions I was really curious to ask you both, which was about how the story for Tilebox developed. And, you know, as you guys were chatting about the vision of what you wanted this to be, how did it evolve over time to, you know, become something that was it always, like, envisioned as something that was very modular, or did it, you know, kind of, did the architecture kind of evolve over time as you guys worked through trying to test this capability out in different types of scenarios?
Yeah, I mean, in here I have to say something that CDL, which is Creative Destruction Labs, has been really instrumental for us in supporting us how to transfer this message, right? And I go back to what Laura said, like, we are engineers. So we tend to talk about features and talk about integrations, and, you know, but people don't want to hear about that. They want to hear about which is the benefit that this brings, which is the new thing that this brings that I don't have right now. So we had to switch a little bit the message in there. And that was a painful process, I have to say. Longer than I envisioned, and painful, coming from engineering, but really, really, really enlightening, because we could see our product from other people's eyes. And about the core of the product, the core was always clear. We had idea of having a modular, flexible system that scales with constellations, and then you don't need, you know, like, to re-implement things over and over again. So that was clear. Now, the direction where this goes, what do we implement first? What do we prioritize? It changed a little bit during the last year because we really listened to what people were saying. So we were listening to customers, we were listening to integrators, we were listening to hardware providers like Colossus that, you know, they build really cool hardware that allows customers to process now in a way that it was not possible before. So this was not a thought that we had 2 years ago. It's a thought that came this year. And then you need to make fast decisions to say, okay, does it make sense for us to follow that path and do this integration, you know, and then provide this new feature instead of another one? That's another thing about the startups. Every time you make a decision, you're letting something off the table. So you have to be careful on what you choose to do. The benefit is that the decision-making process is way faster. So, you know, there are not long processes, long hierarchies. We are all on board. We decide to do something and we get it done. And if it didn't work, well, then we will try something else again. So in that sense, this year has been a lot of building the product for us, experimenting a lot of different aspects of the product and concluding really that in-orbit computing or in-orbit processing, it's something that it's massive and it's a real need. It's a real need that I think it's going to highlight even more how things done long time ago don't scale nicely now, right? Because we've talked to a lot of people doing ground segment processing. They have their systems, obviously, that they've been managing for a very long time. Might be more or less complex systems, more or less people involved, whatever. But now when you want to lift that to in orbit, you cannot just, you know, like you cannot just plug and play. You need to do a lot of adaptations. And that it opens the door to a brand new paradigm of how you actually write software. And this is a very, very interesting aspect for us because that's something that we really bring to the table, this new software practice is how to build efficient software. And we did it on the ground, but I think it's even more clear and visible to see it in orbit and see how fast it integrated with a hardware provider like Colossus, how fast we could do a simulation, how fast they could do it. Like we even send them the binary and they did it themselves. So like we didn't put it on their hardware, they did it themselves and that was done in one day and flawlessly with no problems. Then we could showcase this in Space Tech Expo last November. So this whole process was really fast and was based on the same principles that we do when we build software, right? Few requirements, very clear ones, get it done, iterate, didn't work, change it again. And this has worked very, very nicely with Colossus as well. We could showcase it and we really think that in-orbit computing for any kind of new sensor we see launching, it's a must. Any kind of new application that we see that it's required, it's a must. So every single company is going to have to jump that step sooner or later. So we really wanted to be prepared.
Laura, Todd, did you want to add anything to that?
I mean, just to say, I mean, because so for any of your listeners out there that want to do this kind of subject, CDL Creative Destruction Lab is one of the best nonprofit mentoring organizations. I am a mentor on it. The privilege of it is that you've got all these different types of mentors. So people with excellent technical knowledge, people that are more investments, angel investors, people that have like got a background like me, that look more at the problem solving, the narrative, the storytelling, the vision, the why. And so And it's interesting. So I also work with Colossus, and because I looked at what they're doing, and this is the most fun element of what I do, which is going, oh my God, that's genius. Why aren't we doing that already? And you know, it always comes back to this mentality element, with oh no, can't do it like that. We've done it like this. I'm like, says who? 100 years ago, we don't have any of this technology. So why are you saying it's now fixed in stone? And this is something especially that I love working with more open-minded, forward-thinking people like Laura, like Tilebox, Colossus, in that, right, what is it you're trying to do? Why are you trying to do it? What's the prioritization? What's your minimum viable product? What are the enablers? Get that done first before start saying, oh, we're going to build this product and then launch something. It's like, yeah, but is that helping anyone? Is that delivering the maximum value for the least amount of effort? So there's that element to it. And again, it's like the complementary nature of what's being done. And it's quite interesting because especially with space, when you look at it, I don't know why. I mean, you know, we're literally talking and I'm talking to you on my iPhone, which if I showed you that 25 years ago, you're going to say, well, that's not possible because it didn't exist. And yet We're having a lovely discussion that you're recording after many iterations where they kept a framework, they developed it through. I have to be honest, I mean, I'm fully Apple because I'm lazy and they make my life easy. And this is something else that we talk about with my different ventures and companies that I work with. How are you making someone's life easier? Because if you're not doing that, why the hell are you doing it? You're being an engineer and you want to do technology for the sake of it. So again, we come back to this prioritization element, the why, and who do we need to work with to get this enabler, the minimum viable product in the short period of time so that someone can use it and you can get important feedback into that process. And then do the next steps and the next steps towards your long-term vision and purpose. So this is what is really also lovely with something like a CDL, where you get all this variation and range of innovation, of ideas, of like people going, you know what, I think that's missing. I think that hasn't been done. And they haven't got this whole, it's not possible, or you can't do that. You know, because again, I come back to, why can't you do it? If you still talk to some people in certain sectors of space, it's still not possible to do reusable launches. They're like, yeah, but I'm literally watching it happen. Yeah, but that's different. Okay. Why is that different? And so this is, again, so it's this mentality of people and also what I like to support with. They know their subject. They have identified, well, this, why are we doing it in this old fashioned way? Why aren't we being more modern? I mean, the whole computing in space, how we've discussed with Laura and how I've discussed with Colossus, it's kind of like there is no computing in space. It's kind of like when you used to have a landline, which you two are too young for, obviously, but when you had to call someone on a landline to organize a time and place to meet. And if you didn't meet that time and place, well, there's nothing happening then because you've got no instant messaging, you've got no locator, you've got no like someone doing calculation, whatever. And this is what we want to move back towards. And then especially the other thing is, it's not, oh, I'm going to build one big satellite and that's it. And, you know, look at what's happened with Starlink. It's talking to each other, the live streaming of Starship, for example. So it's really changing this mentality to say, why are we doing what we're doing? How is this iterating on my element? And what are the other elements that are needed? And we make sure it can work together. And I think Colossus and Tilebox have done that beautifully. And like you say, very rapidly, because, oh, it's much nicer than let's build a project plan that lasts 6 years or whatever. And at the end of it, fingers crossed, it all works. It took, like they say, it took a couple of months to get something up and running through the iteration. That's how it should be.
I think it's also, and I think this is very specific to space. I mean, I haven't seen it in other industries that clearly, but I don't know, you want to develop any other kind of tooling for a larger consumer market, right? And you are building a product and your goal always is to bring a product that you get into customers' hands. You don't think about building projects, you want to build a product. But in a space, it's very much, many times, project tailored, and which is good on one side because you experiment certain things, but it can be detrimental in another side because, as Laura said, if you have a project that is going to run for 3 years, where you have two iteration cycles over those 3 years, and we've all worked in those kind of projects, right? We've all wrote those proposals and have those milestones and all these meetings. This really makes things go very slow. And this also makes that when you have a learning during the course of those 3 years, you cannot even bring the learning in because you have to follow the project that you establish, right? And at the end, maybe that project doesn't deliver a product that you can then commercialize. So I see that because we are very much focused on for instance, Earth observation, satellite operators. The goal is to create valuable data products that then you can sell to customers. That's the goal. That should be the core value proposition of many of these companies. And each of them does it in a different way. Each of them provides a specific singular value for that product. When I see many of these companies developing every single part of their data value chain, of their hardware, it's like one cannot be good at everything. You know, like I cannot be good at everything. I would never develop hardware. That's Colossus. They know how to do that much better than I do. It would take me years. It would take me huge teams. And I would be just so slow and probably not even as good as they will be in 3 years or 4 years. So it doesn't make any sense. So you need to bring capabilities together in order to build the ultimate best product in the market that you can sell. And I think a lot of companies kind of get stuck on a mentality of vertical integration at any cost. And I think that's been a word that has been kind of massively misused many times. So sure, be vertical integration on your core value proposition, own that. But the rest, I don't need to, I have now a business, I have a startup, I don't need to be vertically integrating, owning the cap table software that I'm using to handle investors or the tax system that I'm, like, I don't need to be my own lawyer. I'm never going to be as good as a lawyer. So it's just use the services that are out there to build something that is actually innovative and actually better than what the market has and put that into customers' hands really fast. Don't be building and building for 10 years without having a single product that I can purchase. That makes no sense at all. So yeah, I think this concept of moving a little bit from a project mentality of a one-off into a bit more like iterative product development, it's something that at least in a space is very, very necessary.
No, I completely agree. And this is one thing that I'm just super excited with the explosion that I've seen in the commercial space industry is you're starting to see NASA partnering with other commercial entities, for example, or, you know, like startups partnering with each other to offer some sort of a new capability. Frankly, there's so much to do in space to build like a sustainable infrastructure and to do things more efficiently, especially when it comes to remote sensing. Like that's such an important part of what the space industry provides. I think this is a perfect segue into looking more at the Taobox and Colossus integration, because I think this is such a wonderful example of how the space industry is, you know, going more positively in this direction. So I think just to maybe to expand on this a little bit, we've talked a lot about Taobox and Colossus, but can you go into a little more detail on what like Colossus provides and then what this partnership is, what you guys are doing through this partnership with on-orbit computing?
Yeah, so basically this is one example of software plus hardware that can provide additional value. So basically Colossus has been working on onboard computing and they provide the hardware for that. What we've been doing on the ground so far is providing an orchestration layer. So basically people can come and build their algorithms on top of that. And what this orchestration layer does is it handles like an orchestra conductor. It handles what runs where in the most optimal manner, which this is super interesting on the ground. We know there is a lot of cloud processing costs attached to any kind of product, but it's even more interesting in orbit because you have limited availability of resources up there, right? And you want to maximize that. You don't want to have nodes that are not being utilized. You know, it's very costly to put these things up there and maintain them. So what we do with Colossus is to maximize that hardware that they've built in a way that the customer can really use the full capabilities of the system. And the most innovative aspect of this is that how the customer would write that software for in-orbit computing is that it would be exactly the same way as on the ground. So we know that also there are different kind of software and it's not exactly the same to write for things that are running in orbit, but we really managed to have this orchestration layer as abstract as possible that you can come write your Python script in the very same way that you would do for any kind of ground processing with open available data, but utilizing Colossus hardware compute in orbit. So this is a huge jump into what is currently available on a technical level. And by having the full integration, this means that you can really start your processing in orbit. Let's imagine reduce amount of data volumes. This is not the area that I'm interested. This is not the time that I'm interested. I'm only going to process this tiny bit. I'm going to reduce the amount of data volumes that are going to go down to Earth. I'm going to be way faster because I don't need to process a lot of stuff up there. And I'm going to continue my processing on the ground until I reach the final product that I'm going to give to my customer with no delays and with no interruptions. So it's a true end-to-end system from the moment the sensor captures an image until the moment you deliver intelligence to the customer.
Maybe just for some specificity, is Colossus, are they making GPUs or another type of processor? Like, is there a specific hardware that they're trying that like works really well for this kind of application?
Yeah, they use the Jetson. Oh, sorry. Yeah, they use the Jetson currently. They have different kind of systems, one more advanced than the other ones. The Jetson is the one we've been integrating with. Yeah, it's basically like it's nothing else than a Linux-based operation system that we are interacting with, right? So it's very abstract in that sense, and it's a very standard in the sense of the NVIDIA Jetsons that you can really have in the market right now. So
They're using modern technology as well, because rather than everyone said, oh, you can't do that because of radiation and this, and you have to radiation harden and improve and yada yada yada, add weight, etc., because that's how it's been done. Because also a lot of people, again, when we come back to that project mentality of thinking, I'm going to build this big satellite, it's going to be up there for 25 years, that has also changed. And when we look at the ease of access to space, which has been the major change factor for everyone, really, but also just like, why are you building ridiculously overcomplicated pieces of equipment to do what with, when and you keep saying, and Laura, you kept saying, like, doing this processing and stuff, but a lot of them don't even do the processing. Again, it's a data dump, coming back to my landline thing. You like, literally, I get my occasion to do the landline call because I know what time someone's going to be there. They're inside and doing my data don't receive. I'm not doing any processing. I'm not really thinking because I haven't got the modern tech. So I'm using stuff that was developed however many years ago because of the nature of the life cycle management for space, which is again coming back to why that needs to change. So classes, the guys, Jason and Alex, they're just like, well, this is silly. Why are we doing that? Which is again my favorite people to work with, going, why? Why aren't we making our lives easier? So they've gone, right, we're going to do the hardware. And then having that operating system built on top of it that enables you to start prioritizing which features you want to build, because which refined processing, because it's all processing from the raw data right up until you get whatever is in front of you on whatever media platform you're using. It's all processing. But having it done in space much quicker and selective, and I don't know if Sarah, if you've had the opportunity to see the demo of what they're doing, rather than, oh, I'm just going to send you all the data to some analyst on the ground that's either then going to run a program, and it's not cheap to like be sending all that data. Plus, are you getting all the right data? Are you getting like the information you need? So that's like being done now. So that's what essentially they're doing, and it's the first step. And you know, it's equivalent if we go to iPhone 1 kind of level, but it's still better than what was before. And that will then iterate and build very quickly, because with the nature of the different customers that they both have, they're getting that very important feedback loop back in and go, right, what's working well, what's actually useful, how are they using this, what can we like then put in the next increments. And like constantly this iteration. So that's the thinking that we need to have. And again, against the why. Because, you know, and another thing, and I'm going to throw this out there because it's something that really annoys me. You know, oh, we should put more satellites up to get more data to, you know, for example, look at climate change and see if there's a climate crisis. There is climate change. End of discussion. There's enough data. Just look outside your bloody window. I mean, it was 20 degrees here in the south of France a couple of weeks ago. I'm thinking for the ski season, it's not looking good for the snow. It's finally started snowing, so no one panic. But again, you can see it. That's not the problem. The problem is, why do you want all this? Because you're not going to take decisions. And I'm talking at governmental level and individual level. People are like, oh, we should do something about climate change. Fine, take a decision in your daily life to stop eating meat, or, you know, to cycle everywhere. I don't know. But don't say we need more data. So again, there's this question of the why people are doing things. And the other thing that's more important for what they're doing is, and I push human space exploration because I truly believe that thanks to human space exploration, we will evolve the technologies that are needed to save the planet, because humanity as a whole is not the best at doing the right thing globally for everyone. There is more of a tendency, and I say this as a human, to focus on what's better for me. So it's thanks to space exploration we will evolve these technologies. And when we look at what's going to be needed for human space exploration, again, we come to this ability to do processing and computing the same as we do on the Earth. It's just a slightly harsher environment out there. This is the first step towards it. And this is going to be one of these major enablers to have a sustainable human presence, starting with the moon. I mean, people can talk about Mars all they want, but the moon's just around the corner. So, you know, so it's, again, this is why people looking at, I bring this value part, this is my first iteration, this is my first MVP, how can I rapidly use it, get the customer input, get the feedback, and then scale it up towards a larger objective in the future? That's the right way of working.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that our integration with Colossus has been with their Kestrel product. Answering your question, yes, they are all GPUs, but they have like a couple of them. They have different kind of processing powers, and they are for slightly different use cases. We integrated with the Kestrel, which is like for small sats and is the most wide used one. And it's surprising, is what Laura said. It's really surprising the what is possible right now with the hardware and software that we have, what would be possible to do in orbit versus what is actually done. So it's something that we have now the means, we came together, we put it together, we made it very easy for the customer to just leverage both systems without having to do that integration themselves. So we're really bringing in customers that we can showcase towards the industry, look how fast and easy it is to leverage these systems. And how fast and easy is actually to get to the core of your value proposition, which is deliver intelligence, right? Deliver intelligence to the customer. I think the sexy part of space has always been building new things and launching new things. But then we need to think about what do we do with that, and how we maximize what we currently already have and how we leverage the technology that we have.
Maybe going off of that, I was curious to explore some of the challenges that come with more of the like edge computing in space versus say applying the same type of process on the ground side. Ground side processing is very much like our historical way of trying to do a lot of data management, but in space, you are limited by power, you're limited by processing capabilities. Are there any challenges with the actual like algorithm and compute side of things that go along with those that you guys are working through and trying to optimize things?
I mean, yes, definitely. I'm not the software engineer that is playing with that. I would be the data analyst. But from a data analyst perspective, there is a big difference if all you can do is discriminate some bands, that if what you can do is actually more complex algorithms. So when you are processing, for example, Earth observation data, what I've seen is like very complex stacks and very complex algorithms that have recursive parts, right? And that maybe one part of the algorithm gets triggered if a certain condition has been met. So this is something that bringing it to in orbit is very interesting, because then is when you are going to have these learnings on the go on when certain conditions are met, I'm going to trigger this or I'm going to trigger that. And that is a very interesting perspective that I haven't seen much right now in orbit, to be honest. I've only seen like, reduce the amount of bands or reduce the amount of area of interest and then dump that image. But going a bit farther onto the processing steps of pre-processing that data, or I think that is going to be a big jump for in-orbit computing, because then your algorithms can, there is no limit, right? And you can make much more complex algorithms that get triggered on certain conditions while you are still maximizing the power that you have up there, right? I think then it's a balance on which parts are you going to prioritize, which we also make a lot of focus on. But I think this part of bringing more complex algorithms up there, it's a very interesting one.
If I may just build on that, because I think, Sarah, it's a fabulous question, because what I like to say to people is I haven't got a clue what it will look like. One, because I'm not the technical genius expert that these guys are, but also because I'm not arrogant. Again, this notion to say we know everything, we've achieved the pinnacle of humanity for technology and whatnot. I'm like, wow. And again, I come back to 25 years ago, you would have thought I was being a witch or something with the iPhone or whatever version people want. So I don't know what's going to happen. What I do know is that, again, you put that opportunity there. There's enough brilliant, creative, innovative people on this planet that are going to go, we're going to improve it. We're going to do something different. We're going to discover something new. And in fact, I would say, I mean, I've got a few key areas that I think are really going to be the game changers is, of course, energy management, resource management. Again, don't know what that's going to look like, but you got to find something if you're going to have a sustainable human presence on the moon that's a little bit more advanced than what we have today. Other areas, though, are manufacturing. Like, what can we do different when you've got like a different environment with different positives and negatives, and data management? Like you say, the unlimited sources of power, the environmental conditions. And this is where we need to get up there and start using it to learn and go, oh, didn't know that was going to happen. Oh my God, we can take this, we can innovate on this. You know, it's like, again, pick your one, but I'm going to go with the ones I know. Uber saying, I'm going to take Google Maps and I'm going to do something that makes it easier for people to eat. You know, so these kind of elements is what's going to happen when you get up there, rather than saying, yeah, I can't do that, or we have to do it like this because this is the way it's been done, because someone wrote a process 20 years ago, or I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I think it's hard work keeps improving as well. So we need to keep up with that and leverage it, right? And this is something that we've seen a lot, this change also from our side, from static things to more dynamic ones, right? So before you would write data processing pipeline from beginning to end in a way that you process from beginning to end and you wait until the final result is out there. Now we can do things much more dynamic, right? Now you can, I don't know, you can version and upload your software. Meanwhile, it's running in a space. And you can do a lot of things that allow you, as I mentioned before, to take certain steps based on certain conditions. So it's much more smarter way of developing algorithms and smarter way of utilizing your resources.
Absolutely. And maybe along with that, I'm also, you know, hardware is changing, but also the way that we look at, say, the Earth, for example, is also changing, and the rules that we might have for navigating what we pick out of a data set may also change. So have you guys come across that in developing Tilebox, and how are you trying to work that into the way that you think about solving problems?
So basically, I go back to the word abstraction, because I think it's the core of what Tilebox does. We are not tied to a specific data type. We are not a bespoke solution for a specific project. We are a tool that leverages distributed computing, and that distributed computing can happen on the ground, on-prem, in orbit, wherever you want it to happen, because we actually think that the customer should be the one deciding when these things happen. I don't want to force anyone to process in a specific infrastructure, right? And that's not my goal. So I think this opens the door to a lot of things that are very hard to do right now. Like, for example, mixing data that it's stored in different locations without having to move that data preemptively, right? Bring the algorithm to the data and not just put all the data and dump it in one specific server and then process in there. That's very costly. Moving data from one place to another is very costly. We're talking about massive data volumes. And within orbit, it's exactly the same. Downlinking just massive data volumes is just, it's very costly, but it's also very unoptimal. You're just going to get your final product way later. You know, if you're detecting fires and you detect the fire 3 hours after it started, then, you know, like, sure, you have a product, but is it actually useful? So I think distributing where things are processed open up a lot of new possibilities. It is true that it has a lot of complexities behind that we worked on, and most of them we solve them and we approach them. But also it's about how the end user will use this product and which kind of product will they develop with that. And we are very focused on that. We are very focused on seeing how our users interact with Tilebox, which is the feedback that they are giving us, which new data types they want to be able to access, which new capabilities would they like to have in the tool. We listen to them, is what I mentioned. We listen to the market and we listen to the feedback during this year. And in-orbit processing was one constant for every single one of them. And if I think about hyperspectral satellite operators, it's a must. You know, you just cannot go around it. So we listen, we iterate, we adapt, and we keep improving the tool. But the core of it is to have an abstract, flexible, scalable system that works in a distributed manner. And that really moves the whole ecosystem.
If I may say it in a different way, though, because I hate the word tool, and Laura knows this, Sarah, so I will share it with you. Because I launched Skywise for customer services, which originally was looking at predictive maintenance for aircraft, because the last thing you want, and especially as a flying passenger, is that your aircraft is on ground because there's something gone wrong and you're like, well, damn. So, but it's not just that. When you look at the overall system and the amount of data that you have every time you fly a plane, not just on the plane though, what's happening on the weather, what's happening at the airport, what's happening with the ground operations, what's happening with the previous aircraft that was at the gate. And your goal as an airline is to, as quickly as possible, turn that aircraft around, get the passengers off, get the passengers on, and fly it off. So you've got ridiculous terabytes of data that you could pull on to try and make that happen. And you're not going to do that. So again, it's like, well, what's my focus? What's my prioritization? And what's good for one airline is not going to be the same for another. If you take some of the, how do we say it in a nice way, the lower cost airlines that literally depend on operating their aircraft, typically A320s, for example, to the maximum without having any downtime, whereas you've got other airlines that have got a fleet of aircraft that have redundancy in the system where they can like ship an aircraft out to go and pick the passengers up, and it's not going to perturb their overall schedule and stuff. It depends which aircraft they're flying into, what the weather conditions are, if they're flying only in southern Europe, or if they're flying over Arctic conditions. There is a multitude of factors. So you want to be able to, again, make it available. What's the information that needs to make available to a user to do something with, to achieve an output? And this is the thinking, not I provide a tool. It's like, I'm just making it so that you can take the right decision that you need based on what you need to have happen. And this has got to be, again, the mentality, because before we launched Skywise, it was, oh, let's build tools for doing predictive maintenance. Well, that's not useful to anyone, because how is it going to interact with all the other data to achieve an end user story, an output, a scenario? And so, again, this is why they're thinking in a different way.
I think we have time for one more question. So I'll ask a fun one, which is, what do you love the most about your job?
I love it when I show some parts of something we developed to some customer and they love it, or they create something with that. And I see the value that it provides. Like, seeing the value, it's I think it's the coolest part of it. Because as I mentioned, we provide tooling, right? But they are the ones that are doing the magic with that. And then they are creating really cool products out of it. And when you get feedback, or you see directly how easy or how fast or they can develop those products, or how easy they can bring new people to the teams, because, you know, like it's so easy to interact, and they can create really things that they didn't think they would create. That's really rewarding when you're building tooling for companies. And I think this is, it just keeps pushing you forward when things don't work out that well. And then, yeah, listening to their concerns and listening what is important for them, because as Laura mentioned, every customer interacts in a different way. Every customer has a different goal, but all of them kind of have the similar pain points. So just tackling those and seeing how, for two different customers that are creating two different things, this one feature, it's very useful. This is really rewarding. I'm more the customer focused. So if you would talk to my engineering team, they would give you like hundreds of different reasons of things that they like to do. But from my side, it's like transferring everything that we've done ourselves to the outside and seeing how they interact with that.
And I think that goes very nicely with what you were talking about, with having this very rapid iteration, is like being able to show, like actually get things out to people so they could use it. And it's also just very personally rewarding. So I love that you get to see that.
You get much more of this fast feedback, right? And this, for somebody that has been working in long-term projects, it feels really rewarding when you don't wait, you know, like 3, 4, 5 years to see something roll out, but you see it immediately, you get feedback and you implement something new, you iterate over that, and then you see how much they like the new improvement. And this is really rewarding.
Marta, what about you?
Oh, honestly, just like with people. I love seeing brilliant people that have got great ideas, and it's just like helping them. Well, how is that fitting into the big picture vision? Why is it important to someone? But then, and the most important detail, and again, I love engineers. I speak geek, I speak tech, I speak French, I speak Spanish, I speak lots of different languages. How are you effectively communicating that to the person that needs to hear it? And this is one of the most fun things I love doing, because again, so many brilliant people, there's enough resource and brilliance and innovation of all those different elements that need to be done, but it's not brought together in the right way. And also a lot of the time it's missed because the communication is not effectively heard by the person that needs to hear it and take a decision. So this is also something that I very much enjoy, because I like to think it helps accelerate getting these things done, which could have been done well before now, but we get stuck in this, oh, we must follow this process orientation and old fashioned methodology, and people, and I've seen this, and again, a privilege of working with a company like Airbus, is you've got so many nationalities. And even then, in the functions and the different types of organization, where I'm watching people have a conversation and they're practically saying the same thing, but they can't even hear it because they're filtering in a different way. So this is my favorite thing. It's just, I don't want to use the word empowering, because these people are empowered. It's just helping others see the potential of what they're doing, and unlocking that. So that's great fun.
No, I like connecting the dots, I feel like, is sometimes such a hard thing. And so your job just sounds very fun. and just getting people to understand what their role is in a larger picture and see things from a different perspective. I always feel like it's easy to see things from an outsider's view. A lot of the time that a friend will tell me something and it's like, oh, I didn't see it that way.
So yeah. It is great fun.
All right. So I do see that we are at the top of the hour. So I don't want to hold you guys on for too much longer. But thank you both so much for hanging out with me on here today. This was so much fun. And I really appreciated just a wonderful, philosophical discussion about really just a new way that we should be thinking about developing for the space industry. And, to me personally, it's very inspiring to hear this kind of a story and the way that you guys are working to build something that's fast and iterative and, actually make a difference in a short amount of time. So I appreciate your willingness to talk on this podcast.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It was really nice. It was great. Always great fun also when Laura joins.
So double Laura. No, thank you so much. And I always I admire anyone that's doing their own podcast and trying to really more communicate more effectively with people and get different ideas out. So a big thank you to you, Sarah, as well for taking that initiative and leading the way.
Thank you all for tuning in to this episode of The Art of Space Engineering. If you want to learn more about Tilebox, their integration with Colossus or CDL, I put links to all of their websites in the episode description. A special thank you goes to Megan Van Patten for making this conversation possible and showing me a side of the space industry that I really don't get to see. So thank you very much, Megan. If you've been enjoying this podcast and you want to support it, please share these episodes with your friends who may be interested in them. And don't forget to follow this on your favorite podcast source to get notifications on upcoming episodes. Here's looking forward to future adventures and the lessons learned from them. Cheers, Sarah.